27, verses 13 through 23. And I'm reading from the New American Standard Bible. This is the portion of a wicked man from God, and the inheritance which tyrants receive from the Almighty. Though his sons are many, they are destined for the sword, and his descendants will not be satisfied with bread. His survivors will be buried because of the plague, and their widows will not be able to weep. Though he piles up silver like dust and prepares garments as plentiful as the clay, he may prepare it, but the just will wear it, and the innocent will divide the silver. He has built his house like the spider's web, or as a hut which the watchman has made. He lies down rich, but will never again. He lies down rich, but never again. He opens his eyes, and it is no more. Terrors overtake him like a flood. A tempest steals him away in the night. The east wind carries him away, and he is gone. For it whirls him away from his place. For it will hurl at him without sparing, and he will surely try to flee from its power. Men will clap their hands at him and will hiss him from his place. Now, let's go through first and simply try to explain the passages, and then we'll try to come back and relate the passages in the way that we stated. Notice in verse 13, in 27 verse 13, the term portion and the term inheritance are used in parallelism. This is the portion of the wicked man from God and the inheritance which tyrants receive from the Almighty. Now, sometimes the land that Israel was given, divided among the tribes, is called their portion. It's called their portion. There are several times where portion and inheritance are used interchangeably, but when they divide up the land, that is their portion, that is their inheritance. But what is interesting here about these words, while these words often describe being given a blessing from God, whether it is land or whether it is God himself, as God himself was often said to be the Levite's portion or the Levite's inheritance. A word that is often used to describe God's blessings here describes God's judgment on the wicked. This is the portion of the wicked man. This is his inheritance. It describes something bad instead of something good, as we often think. And in verse 14, though he has many sons, they are destined for the sword. Now, children are a blessing from the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is, you know, his blessing. I'm not quoting exactly, but it's from Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5. That's a blessing from God. And so even a wicked person might be granted that blessing of many children. But the text says, though the sons are many, they are destined for the sword. They are destined for the sword. And then he says, they will not be satisfied with bread. Remember one of the curses of the covenant in Deuteronomy 28, verses 38 through 42, is that you will sow, but you will not reap. You're going to plant things, but you're not going to receive the harvest. And so in this particular case, the text says they will experience the sword, they will experience the famine. And look at verse 15. His survivors will be buried because of the plague. Now, what the Hebrew text literally says is they will be buried by death. Buried by death. But it may be, death may be the idea of a plague. Remember, we called the bubonic plague the Black Death. And think about this just a moment. This would be in verses 14 and 15, saying that the sons of the wicked man are going to experience sword, famine, and plague, or sword, famine, and pestilence. Do you ever remember hearing those words of the Bible together? Sword, famine, and pestilence. Where would you hear those words together?
Revelation.
You do hear them in Revelation, Revelation 6, verse 8, I believe it is, Mark. But I think only once in Revelation. So you were right on, you're laser at one time in Revelation, you remember. But it's used repeatedly in one Old Testament book. Do any of you remember offhand? No, no. See, now, right now, I'm not hurt that y'all don't know. But since we're starting Jeremiah in a couple of weeks, in a few weeks, if y'all didn't know, I'd be really hurt. Okay? So now when I throw it out some Sunday morning or Wednesday night, what are three judgments here? Y'all are going to look really sharp by saying sword, famine, and pestilence. Okay? So, but you see those terms repeated in the book of Jeremiah. I have heard about the smallest estimate I've heard is like 15 times. So you will see that quite frequently they'll mention. So here's a wicked person. This is his inheritance. This is his portion. He's going to have children that are going to die from the sword, the pestilence, or from famine. Now, in verse 15, it says, their widows will not be able to weep. Their widows. Do any of you have a different translation instead of their widows?
On his footnote, it says his.
His widows. His widows. The Hebrew text has his widows. The Septuagint and the Syriac translation had their widows. Now, you may say, what's the big deal? It may have been the Septuagint kind of shifted it to there to make it not sound like the wicked man was a polygamist. You know, it was not his widows, it was their widows. But if this wicked man was a polygamist, I mean, you know, that happens sometimes, but that's not the point. I think the point is this. The point is either that their wives didn't love them enough to mourn them, or maybe they've experienced so many losses that they're overwhelmed and stunned and unable to cry. Because there's another place where it talks about the widows of the priests not being able to mourn them in Psalm 78, verse 64. It may just be that losses were so overwhelming that they could not mourn. So they're going to lose their children. They're going to lose their wealth. Now, this is an easy question. Usually when you see wealth mentioned and it's accompanied with another type of wealth, it's going to be silver and gold. Here it is silver and garments, interestingly. And that will be mentioned both in verse 16 and verse 17, silver and garments. And then he talks about wearing the garments in verse 17 and dividing the silver. Remember, Jesus also spoke of wealth in terms of garments, where the Bible says, lay not for yourselves riches upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt and thieves break in and steal. For lay up yourselves treasures in heaven. It could be that that it's silver and gold. It could be that it's clothing. These are both ways to describe the wealth of the wicked. But whatever happens, however you describe their wealth, silver and gold and garments, it's not going to be left in the hands of the righteous, or the hands of the just, but it's going to be given ultimately toward those who are innocent. By the way, just a few references. I think you could come up with a few. Where are some cases in the Old Testament in particular where you see garments being very valuable things, expensive things, and things of wealth? Can you think of some instances offhand?
I'm thinking of Joseph.
Okay. You know, Joseph wore the special garments of his father. And then, of course, after he comes out of the prison to be a ruler of the people, he exchanges his garments in that picture. You remember, too, Achan, when he stole some things from Jericho. He stole a beautiful mantle from Shinar. And Elisha goes back to Naaman and says, two sons of the prophets came, and will you give each of them a change of garments in 2 Kings 5? But there are several times that garments are mentioned as a sign of wealth. And so he's going to lose his children. His wealth is going to be taken from him and given to people who are innocent. And his house is going to be fragile and frail. Verse 18. Verse 18, he has built his house like the spider's web, or a hut which the watchman has made. Now, that phrase spider's web, some of your versions may have moth. Do your versions have moth there? Okay, some of your versions will have perhaps bird's nest. Do any of you have that? There is a lot of debate about what is the best word to translate it. But this is the thing that's interesting to me. And I like the debates about that, because whatever the answer is, it doesn't affect our overall understanding of the text. It's still making the same point. The point is their dwelling place is fragile and short-lived, however you interpret it. It says, like the spider's web, and I'm just going by the New American Standard, or like the hut the watchman has made. There's a reference to that kind of thing, a hut made by people that are working the fields, in Isaiah 1 and verse 8. And often they were built only for a person to live in for a short time during harvest. Then they were left, and then they collapsed. And he says, that's the way the house of the wicked is going to be. And then in verse 19, he lies down rich, but never again. He opens his eyes and is no more. The suddenness of judgment is what strikes us. You lay down rich, you wake up poor. And verse 20, terrors overtake him like a flood, a tempest steals him away in the night. It's striking to me that back in chapter 24, Job had talked about the wicked feeling more comfortable at night. In Job 24, verses 13 through 17. But now he is swept away by terrors like a flood and a tempest, a storm in the night. And verse 21, the east wind carries him away, and he is gone, for it whirls him away from his place. For it will hurl him without sparing. He will surely try to flee from its power. Men will clap their hands at him and will hiss from his place. What would you suggest? What would the idea behind clapping can be different things in different contexts, but by the fact that it's paralleled with hissing, what does that indicate to you?
Ridicule,
derision, you know, all of that is involved right here. Now, thank you for listening with me. in trying to go through that. We want to first get a grasp of that. But let's look at some of the questions that we have tried to ask. First of all, it was striking to me how these words here in 27, verses 13 through 23 sound like Job's experiences. It sounds like Job's experiences. Now, what would be some things that you would state in that regard? How does this sound like Job's experience, Ray?
Maybe sort of close. Though his sons are many, they are destined for the sword, where his children are all killed.
Okay. Yes. And I really appreciate Ray's answer, because not only does he give a right answer, but he goes in the order of my right answers here. But, and that is, here in 27 verse 14, he loses his children. His children are going to die to sword, famine, and pestilence. And we know the horrible end that Job's children come to. Now, that may not be the last time that we invoke Job's children. But Ray is exactly right. He loses his children there. Now, I'm going to divide up some of this, okay? He loses his children, but it also mentions in 27:14 the sword. And we will specifically see the sword mention in Job 1:15, in Job 1:17, as Job's livestock is stolen, all his servants killed by the sword, except the one who survived to bring the disastrous news to Job. So very good. Very good. Now, I'm also going to mention another thing here before. I'm still wanting to give you a chance to speak, but because I'm tying some of these things together, Job's riches, it says your riches are going to be taken by somebody else in chapter 27 verses, it was really verses 16 and 17. And Job's riches were stolen, again, the same passages. His livestock stolen, all of these things taken from him in verses 13 through 15 and verse 17. But what else do you see? David?
It talks about the widows. His wife told him to curse God and die, which,
okay,
if he had done that, would have made her a widow.
Okay.
But she didn't seem to be mourning what he had lost or even supportive.
Okay.
And so that phrase just kind of reminds me of his wife and the foolish thing she was saying.
Okay, that is a good one to tie in there. It is difficult to know completely how to interpret her words, but it certainly, she would have been a widow if Job would have done what she said, to curse God in such a way that God would take his life. Mark.
Survivors will be buried because of the plague. The last thing he loses is his health.
Okay, yes. Now, I'm not into what I'm about to describe, okay? Some people try to line up everything Job experienced, and they try to look at all of it and try to figure out what disease he had. I just don't think that's going to be a successful adventure. But I will say this. And from some of the description, the fact that he had some kind of plague is not impossible. You know, the fact that particularly if the plague was viewed as some kind of judgment from God and he had something similar to that. So we're tying in the fact that he experienced the plague and Job's his health experience, as Mark was saying, he loses his physical health. What else? How do his children, which Ray has already mentioned, how do they die? What happens? House collapses, and it's from a great wind. And that ties both with verse 18 and verse 21. A great wind from the desert, which would have been an east wind, a great wind, and the house collapses. And I hope I spelled that correctly, but you get the idea that Job experiences both of these things. Now, in chapter 27, verse 20, Job used this term, terrors overtook him. The terrors overtook him. Job later, this is a word that he has not used to this point, but in 30:15, that's going to be used to describe, by Job, to describe his own experiences. 30 verse 15. And the fact that others clap their hands and hiss at him in verse 23 talked about derision, as we stated. Derision, 27 verse 23. And while that specific word has not been used by Job of his experiences, Job does talk about being a joke to his friends in 12 verse 4. He talks about being a byword and one at whom people spit in 17 and verse 6. And he talked about losing all his friends and relatives in chapter 19, verses 13 through 20. So the point is that Job has experienced all of these things. Can we make... Oh, my word. This has been hacked just a second. Can you look at this? I mean, it's a good bad picture, but can you do something about that? Okay. I apologize if that was hacked for just a moment. Yes.
So, should I stop video?
I don't know.
I'm going to stop video, okay? Thanks. I can. How do I do that?
Come on, sis. You can do it.
Sorry.
Oh, he's going to stop it for good. Or okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry about that, people. I know y'all didn't even see all what all happened. But that is shameful. And may the Lord bring judgment on those who do such things. But this sounds like Job's experiences here. Any other questions? Any other comments? Yes.
I see 19. You see how quickly he lost his wealth.
Again, yes.
It's like he lays down bricks, but wakes up. Or,
yes, absolutely. The suddenness.
the suddenness of judgment. The suddenness of judgment in chapter 27, verse 19. And that's exactly what we see in 1, 13 through 19. Okay. Very good. Very good. Now, okay, after we see that, these are passages where the friends say the same thing. I don't know if we're going to be able to put all three categories up here at one time, but I want to tell you what I'm hitting at here. What I'm hitting at is this, that in this particular passage, it sounds more like what the friends have said than what Job has said. It's more like the friends than what Job. And what we're going to try to do as after we look at these ways that it sounds more like the friends than Job, is we're going to try to figure out what do we do with that? What do we do with that knowledge? Now, the children of the wicked. The children of the wicked had been mentioned as experiences consequences for their sins and for their own sins and for their parents' sins in all these passages by Eliphaz in 5:4, by Bildad in 8:4, by Bildad in 18:19, and also in 20 verse 10. The children of the wicked are described in each of those passages. Specifically, the sword was mentioned as a penalty by Eliphaz in chapter 15 and verse 22. So the friends have spoken like this. Though his sons are many, they are destined for the sword, and his descendants will not be satisfied with bread. Now, what I want to do in some of these cases, and I don't know if I can do this in all of these cases, I want to point out right here the specific difference between what the friends were saying and what Job said. I want to see the specific difference between that. Has Job said that the sons of the wicked die such an early death? No. Job has a different view in the view presented in 27:14 that the children of the wicked die early. The opposite is said in 21 verses 8 through 12. The wicked is pictured as continuing to live on and live a long life, and everything goes well. He lives on, he lives a long life, and his children are all about him playing happily. So you see, that sounds a whole lot more like the friends than it does like Job. Job has presented the opposite kind of picture in this. And one of the ideas involved in 27 and verse 14 and 15, when it says his survivors will be buried because of the plague, and it literally says to be buried by death, it may imply that the wicked person, this may be implied by the friends, that the wicked person have no burial. But Job has stated before that the wicked person has someone watching over their grave. They not only have a beautiful headstone, but someone guards, watch over their graves, as if they were important people in Job 21, verses 32 and 33. Now, and I realized I did not write down a passage, forgive me, about the friend saying that the wicked has no burial. But what are other points? What are other points where you can see that what Job says sounds more like the friends?
Well, the statement right at the beginning of this, this is the portion of the wicked man from God. I think this is Bildad in 20, verse 29. This is the wicked man's portion from God.
Okay, yes.
It uses the exact same.
27, verse 13 is almost the same as 20, verse 29. Okay, that is, those are Zophar's words, but they're one of the friends. 2029 is almost the same. As 27 verse 13. 27 verse 13. Okay. Anything else? What else? Okay, let me give you a few others. What you see is the friends have said statements like, the friends have made statements like, all the wicked has, all that they have, they are forced to give back. They're forced to give back. And we've seen that before in chapter 20. Chapter 20, verse 18. He returns what he has attained. He cannot swallow it. As to the riches of his trading, he cannot even enjoy them. That was 20, verse 18. So the friends have said, whatever you gain as a wicked person, whatever you gain by your dishonesty and your corruption, you're going to be forced to pay it back. You're going to be forced to pay it back. What this passage says is that's what Job is saying. All the silver you've accumulated, all the clothes that you have gathered for yourself, other people are going to wear those clothes and other people are going to collect your silver. They're going to divide their silver among themselves. And now, this term that is used here for in verse 17 to show how this differs from Job, and I apologize, I'm seeing, though I was very excited today getting all this together, I realize describing all of this in one class may be a little difficult, but in 27 verse 17, that particular word for just that Job has used, instead of saying that the wicked will give all their things to those who are just, it pictures in 27:17 those who are just being mocked and being ridiculed. How they become a joke to their friends. And the same way that word innocent that's used there in 27:17 27:17, that word innocent that's used, that word was used by Job to say that in Job 9:23, that God mocks the despair of the innocent. God mocks the despair of the innocent. Now, there's more that I could present. More than I could present. In chapter 27, 27, verse 21 and 23, the wicked is removed from his place. The wicked removed from his place. That is used in 8, verse 18. And, excuse me, 18, verse 21, and 20, verse 9, to talk about the wicked being removed from his place. And the fact that the wicked would be an object of ridicule, Job says this in 27:23, be an object of ridicule. It doesn't use the specific words, but Bildad has that idea in 18 verse 20 when he says, all that hear from the east and the west will be astonished at his fate. Now, I have a few more points. I recognize with all I've gotten on the board, I mean, honestly, I don't know how somebody couldn't just walk in cold and understand, hey, you're in Job 27, and this is the three lists. But you know, some people, that may be a little bit too much. But my point is that this sounds like something the friends have said instead of something that Job has said. Now, first of all, have I explained the case, or do you have other examples or a question about something I haven't stated clearly there? Anything? Okay, if I've stated that clearly, then what are we going to do with this case? We're here, what you see is Job uttering words that seem to be the opposite of what he said and what the friends say. Now, I'm going to give one more example of what Job said. That word tempest, which is used in 27 verse 20, used in 27 verse 20, Job used it in 21:18. But he is asking in 21 verses 17 and 18, how often does this kind of judgment come to the wicked? Are they as straw before the wind, before the tempest, and like chaff which the storm drives away? The point is, how often does it happen that the wicked really experience judgment? And so what we have to do, how do we account for this? Has Job had a conversion? Is Job all of a sudden seeing the world as they have seen the world? Or is it something else? We gave a few possibilities when we were in chapter 24, verses 18 through 25. We gave four or five possibilities. I think all of those possibilities are open here, but I don't think they necessarily go in the same direction. I think in this case, look at verses 7 through 12, which we covered the last time we were together. In that chapter, Job described his enemy in verse 7, his opponent in verse 7. His enemy, his opponent. And as he described his enemy and opponent in verse 7,
in verse, he described them in the singular, but when he comes to verses 12 and 13, he uses the plural. I think he's talking about his friends as the enemy, the opponent, the ones who have disagreed with him. I think that's who he's describing. And he is telling them, listen, you are my enemy, and may he be as the wicked, and may my opponent be as the unjust. I think what he's doing in verses 13 through 23 is Job is taking the kind of picture. He says, you have been my enemy. This is the kind of thing that you said happens to the wicked. And remember your own words, because they're going to come to judgment against you. They're going to come to judgment. If you say this is what's going to happen to the wicked, you've been wicked and falsely accusing me. You've been wicked in that. And this is what you can expect. I think, in a sense, the last words that Job is addressing to his friends, he's addressing to his friends, warning them by their own words of God's judgment. I think that's what he's saying. Any thoughts? Any questions? Any disagreements? Feel free to make them. Now, this was maybe not as evident in this passage as it has been in some, but how would we say, I could have left part of that, sounds like Jesus experiences. How in these passages do these words describe Jesus' experiences? David?
Well, Jesus is certainly destined for the sword. It wasn't literally a sword.
Okay.
Death.
But there is an Old Testament prophecy. Strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. And it mentions the sword specifically in that Old Testament context of Zechariah. Zechariah 13 verse 7. Zechariah 13 verse 7. So Jesus is struck with the sword.
Yeah. His side was pierced by a sword.
His side was pierced by the sword, yes. That's right. But the sword was 27:14, and the Old Testament prophecy, as you said, Zechariah 13:7, and the reference you make is from the Gospel of John 19:31-37. So Jesus, yes, experiences that. Very good. Even think about this, going back to the first part of the chapter. Jesus, or Job says, as God lives, who has taken away my rights, and the Almighty who's embittered my soul. But he says in verse 5, far be it from me that I declare you right. Till I die, I will not put my integrity away. Now, this is what I'm saying, summing this up. In this passage, verse 2, just as Job swore by God that he was innocent, so Jesus swears by God that he is innocent. Remember, I adjure you, Matthew 26, verses 63 and 64, I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you're Christ, the Son of God. And he said, I am.
And you see the Son of Man on clouds of heaven coming in glory and power. That is Matthew 26, 63 and 64. Jesus swore his innocence in that way. Remember, that is stated in 1 Timothy 6, verses 12 and 13, that Jesus testified the good confession before Pontius Pilate in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 13. And so in a sense, that's what he's doing here. He is declaring by God that he is innocent of wrongdoing. Now, David has already mentioned the sword, but think about this, verses 16 and 17. Though he piles up silver like dust and prepares garment as plentiful as the clay, he may prepare it, but the just will wear it, and the innocent will divide the silver. They're going to take away his silver. They're going to take away his garments. What's the connecting point? As Jesus is on the cross, the soldiers gamble for his clothing. In John 19, verses 23 and 24, the soldiers gamble for his clothing. In a sense, Jesus experiencing the fate that Job here is describing for the wicked man. His clothing is taken away. The wicked are wearing his clothing. In verse 19, he lies down rich, but never again. He opens his eyes and it is no more. Do you know the word that is used here in 27:19 for rich? That word is the word used in 2 Corinthians 8 verse 9, which says about Jesus that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, that you through his poverty might be made rich. In a sense, when he came to this earth, he comes as one who is rich, and by the very fact of becoming a man and living among us, he lost those riches. I'm not saying he wasn't God come in the flesh, but I am saying that is a way to picture what he experienced. And as men will clap their hands and hiss at the wicked person in verse 23, when Jesus was on the cross, he experiences mockery. He experiences derision. You see this in Matthew and Mark and in Luke, as they all emphasize, let him save others. He saved others. He can't save himself. Let him come down from the cross and we'll believe him. They're mocking his claims to be king of the Jews. Jesus experienced the fate that the friends have so often said belongs to the wicked, that we might be forgiven, so that we might be declared innocent and justified. So even in this respect, Christ, this foreshadows Christ and his experiences on the cross. Well, any other specifics that you want to think of?
Verse 19. He lies down rich, but never again. He opens his eyes and it is no longer. He was buried in a rich man's tomb.
Okay.
But he opened his eyes. He wasn't there any longer.
Ooh. So kind of the resurrection.
Yes.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
He lies down with the rich, if we were. But that's a good idea.
He doesn't stay there.
How many Gospels state Joseph of Arimathea was rich?
All of them.
Only Matthew.
Only Matthew.
Only Matthew says this. Matthew 27:57, I believe, that makes that reference, 27:57. And where does the Old Testament talk about that? He makes his grave with the rich.
Yeah, it's in
Isaiah 53, verse 9. Okay. Thank you for bearing with us here tonight.